WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Atlantic Records, which celebrates its 50th anniversary this year, is best known as the home of some of the greatest soul music ever waxed. This was a logical development for the company, which had always been in the forefront of Black popular music. In the second part of our series on Atlantic, rock historian Ed Ward shows us how it happened.
With the arrival of Jerry Wexler and the signing of Ray Charles in the early 50s, Atlantic Records entered its classic period. With founder Ahmet Erdogan developing his songwriting skills, engineer Tom Dowd being able to make even the funkiest studio sound good, and a genuine commitment on all sides to good music, the label was far more streamlined than the average R&B indie of the period. Ray Charles was unique. A blues singer heavily influenced by gospel, he was struggling to find his own style when the label signed him, but when he found it, it was something new.
Well, I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh, yeah. Say, I got a woman way over town, good to me. Oh, yeah. She give me money when I'm in need. Yeah, she's a kind of I got a woman way over town that's good to me. Oh, yeah, she says loving.
Wexler, who had already coined the term rhythm and blues while at Billboard magazine, heard this and called it soul, a term he'd often heard jazz musicians use. Soul music, of course, wasn't born at Atlantic, but the label was a powerful midwife. Part of this was due to the fact that as the 50s moved on, Atlantic was smart enough to sign deals not only with performers, but with producers. Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller had written Hound Dog as teenagers and had their fingers on the pulse of the new rock and roll sound. They'd been working with an L.A. group called the Robins, and when Atlantic convinced the group and their producers to move to New York, they were rechristened the Coasters.
Take out the papers and the trash. Or you don't get no spending cash.
Just finish cleaning up your room.
Songs like Yakety Yak struck a chord with Black and white teens and made the Coasters one of the most successful acts on the label. The Yakety Sax on the record was played by King Curtis, who would become a mainstay of the label's studio sound over the next decade. Lieber and Stoller were also assigned to work with the Drifters, who'd completely changed personnel since the early days, and called on their young L.A. colleague Phil Spector to help with songwriting chores once the Drifters' lead singer, Benny King, spun off onto a solo career.
There is a road in Spanish Harlem.
Harlem, co-written by Spector in 1960, was an early landmark of soul, from its Black Pride lyrics to King's vocal. Another producer they'd worked closely with was Burt Burns, who had come to them with a young preacher from Philadelphia, who had become another important early soul figure.
When your baby leaves you all alone, and nobody calls you on the phone, don't you feel like a cry? Don't you feel like a cry? Well, here I am, honey. Come on, you cry to me. When you're all alone,
Solomon Burke's Cry to Me was a typical meticulous Atlantic recording session featuring top-flight jazz men like Hank Jones and Bucky Pizzarelli and an arrangement by Klaus Ogerman, who worked with Frank Sinatra, and it paid off in sales. The Jazz Connection wasn't just Atlantic showing off. Nessu Erdogan, one of the label's founders, remained committed to jazz, and while his brother and Jerry Wexler mined the pop end of the black music of the time, Nessu signed deals with some of the most progressive jazz musicians, like the Modern Jazz Quartet, John Coltrane, Charles Mingus, and Ornette Coleman, all of whom made important records for the label. But the money was in soul, and Wexler was smart enough to know there was just so much you could do in the North. He carefully monitored the Southern retail situation and offered Atlantic's national distribution clout to Stax Records, a small label that had formed in Memphis in 1959. Before long, Atlantic was sending its own artists to Stax to record with their phenomenal house band, and the results were astounding.
I'm gonna wait till the midnight hour. That's when my love comes tumbling.
Wilson Pickett's In the Midnight Hour was co-written by Pickett and Stax guitarist Steve Cropper and established Pickett's career. Wexler also had his eye on a young vocalist who he felt was being straitjacketed into recording pop jazz records, a woman he'd first noticed when she was a young teenager recording gospel. When Aretha Franklin's contract with the Columbia Records was up, Wexler moved fast to get her for Atlantic and, working with Tom Dowd and the best musicians he could find, turned her into Lady Soul.
In the latter half of the 60s, Atlantic was the powerhouse of soul. But the Black Pride movement soul helped fuel had another side, and it blew up in Jerry Wexler's face at a black radio convention in 1968, where he found himself reviled as a white man exploiting black talent and burned in effigy. Atlantic kept recording soul, but clearly it was time to start looking elsewhere.
Ed Ward is Fresh Air's rock historian. He currently lives in Berlin.